awesome. Good to have you here in
Austin, Texas.
Thanks for having me. This
is great. For sure. David Ness, U.S. Bank. Why don't you, I guess, tell us something about where you're from. Like, first, where are you from? I know Minneapolis, where you are now, but are you from Minneapolis?
I'm not. I'm originally from Scotland.
Scotland.
Yes. So I moved to the States about 20 years ago.
Okay.
Tale as old as time. Came over for a job, met a girl, stayed, and here I am. So, yes. I used to work internationally for a company called Cargill. It's a big privately held company based headquartered in Minneapolis. There are so many big companies that are headquartered in Minneapolis. Are you just going to stay there from a gravitational pull? And so now at US Bank, leading their fintech partnerships and investments team.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
Love it.
Yeah.
I think it's the best job in the world.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We have a lot to talk about.
Good.
So how did you get into fintech? When does it just arrive at your role as senior vice president of innovation? Is that right?
Okay.
Long and convoluted story. I'm originally a cognitive neuroscience major, which means philosophy and psychology. And then I wanted to have a radio philosophy show, right? So I took a job at the BBC, absolutely hated it, and then went back and got a master's. And then I did a range of positions and jobs, all in technology through to strategy for numerous different companies, and ended up at Target, where I was a chief strategist for their then a chief information officer. And this was 2 months before the data breach happened, if you remember the data breach back in 2015, 14, whenever it was. And then I lost her and all the direct reports who were my customers. And so I had a new boss who was busily scratching his head saying, what do we do in this mess that we have right now? And I said, I'd really like to set up an external innovation function where we could look outside of large companies and find small companies that are solving our problems and bring them in. And so he said, David, I don't care what you do. Go away for 6 months, right? And said, if you need money, you can sign a check up to $30,000. If you need anything else, come and see me, but just come back in 6 months. So I did that. And that was about 12 years ago. So from them, I basically learned how to take small companies into bigger companies. I then went and did a venture creation company too, with Intel, MIT, Target, and IDEO, a design firm, all about the future of food, tying back to my Cargill background. That got defunded, as some startup things are want to do. And at that point, I had a friend at US Bank who said, you know what? We need help setting up a fintech practice. And I was like, I don't know anything about fintech, but I know a lot about bringing small, nimble companies into larger organizations. So that was like 7 years ago.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
So you brought, going back to your original, like your education, the cognitive, which I think is philosophy, super interesting. So you carry that forward into everything that you do, more or less. I mean,
I don't wax lyrical on like big philosophical topics anymore, but the analysis and the critical thinking that you learn through that really helps. And then psychology is something I joke about, but actually, most of what my job is reading people and putting the right people together in a room and knowing what's going to happen. So I actually probably use it more than I think.
Yeah, you've been doing that, sounds like, for the most of your career.
Yeah.
And putting people together. So doing the analysis, critical thinking for technology, where it might fit, bringing those two together. And so is that, tell us a little bit about what you're doing at US Bank.
Yeah, so partnerships and investments. And the investments is relatively new because there was a change in regulations that allowed us to do it more as a bank, because banks obviously very heavily regulated, very risk averse, but are trying to create solutions for the customers that are constantly changing and their expectations are being set by fintechs everywhere, right? And so what we do is spend a lot of time just saying, what are either our internal pain points or problems or challenges, and or what are our customers wanting and expecting from us? Mm-hmm. And we sit with those business line leaders and we get a list of those things and we kind of make them into kind of a short list of things that we're going to go after sequentially. And then we set up a series of partnerships with venture capitalist players, people like Alloy Labs that are out there, ecosystem players. And we have them help us find the right people for these problems. So if I say, I have problem X, who do you know that might be working on this? And so we get a list of that. We go check them out and say, okay, this one kind of rings true as to what we think. This one will work from a cultural point of view. Technology is great on this one. Let's do that. We sit them down and then my team shuffles through those and then puts them in front of the business. And we tell the business, if you like them, you have to work with them. Yeah. Meaning you've asked me to go and find you something. You got to take it to the next level if I find what you're looking for.
So I brought you together. Now you.
So it's psychological guilt is basically the biggest tool that I use in my job, right? So it's like, I'm spending my time and resources, So if it's serious and we find someone that can hit the metrics we've defined, you then have to do the pilot with them and take it from there. And the reason we make the business do the work after we've done the initial lift is that relationship component, yeah. Right? So if the relationship isn't there, it's you can't commercialize a solution where the business doesn't want to own it, right? And businesses want to own it if they see the results and they like the people on the team behind them.
Yeah. Isn't that true though?
Yeah.
If you have good connection, good chemistry, we think about that at Customer in our agency is good chemistry, good alignment with yeah. the leadership team that we're working with, because it is so hard what we all do for a living to yeah. build these brands and satisfy our customers, follow through on our promises, do all those good things.
Yeah.
Is there an example? I can imagine there's a long list of problems or better ways of doing things that the different folks at US Bank want your help to achieve. Yeah. Like, are there any examples you can share?
One of my favorites to talk through is deposit switching on accounts. Sounds really boring, right? But think of it this way. If you want to set up a new bank account and you want to easily get your employees, your paycheck put into the new bank account, it takes quite a while. It's painful. Mm-hmm. It's a friction-full process. We were asked by our business 4 years ago, right? So this is not an anecdote for the speed of innovation, right? But 4 years ago, we were asked to try and solve that problem. We found a company that was actually in our own backyard in Minneapolis that was doing it. We brought them in, had a pilot, right? Mm-hmm. So again, got the business to do the pilot, right? But it was just still too much friction, right? There. And so we paused it at that point and said, thanks very much. It's just not working out. And then we kept an eye on that company. They ended up being acquired by a different company, but someone that worked there went off and went into stealth for a while. Mm-hmm. And because we knew them and we had a conversation with them, they put their hand back up and said, hey, I've got this problem. Remember we were trying to solve this deposit switching thing? And we said, yeah. And so he said, I think I fixed it, right? So it comes back, great solution. The company's called Atomic Financial and we commercialized that. And so now you can switch your paycheck over as you set up a new account, 3 clicks. So smooth. It's beautiful. Yeah. And that has allowed us to get a ton of deposits with us last year.
Yeah. And so few people outside of our industry know how many partners it takes. Oh. It's almost like how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? I mean, many.
Yes.
Right. So the Atomic Financials, that's like one example. That's a good one. Are there any others that come to mind, top of mind?
Trying to think. All my exciting ones I'm working with right now, so I can't share them.
You don't have to share names. I'm just curious. Like, so a bank like US Bank yeah. that is so large, has so many constituents, so many demands from the business to solve problems for the customers. Are there any other ways that you see that are newer, innovating, that you are solving problems using fintech? Like the deposit switching makes tons of sense.
Yeah, so we do it. Maybe let me answer your question with numbers, right? So I talk to thousands of fintechs annually, and when we start doing work with them, we start tracking them, right? Last year, we worked with over 369 companies. Okay. Across all ranges, to your point, across all ranges of the bank. And so we call everything fintech, but if you look at my portfolio, it's probably about 40 to 50% enterprise tech. Mm-hmm. We're a large organization, right? We've got 80,000 people. Large organizations have very set needs as far as data management, cleaning those robotic process automation, all those kind of things. And so a lot of the success is all behind the scenes, but if we can shave a basis point off a process, we're doing amazing things, right? Because that translates to millions of dollars for the bank. And we used to literally have truckloads of paper turning up, right, into an office in Boston where people would then be employed just to transcribe that paper, data entry, right? Remember in university, you'd get those terrible jobs for like $20 an hour, right? Just because no one ever
had to read it, type it.
Exactly. Yeah. But automating that kind of stuff, where it's just that there's all these different things that are still out there and problems trying to be solved. It's never the same thing twice, which is what I love about the job.
Yeah, that's incredible. So 300 plus partners in the ecosystem and probably always adding, moving around. There's new things coming out all the time.
Yeah.
What do you think is one of the biggest challenges with what you do?
Great question. one of it is staying on top of things, right? Because, yeah, somebody told me a stat that there's a new company formed every 6 seconds. Oh, God. Right? If you think of, like, I have a team of five. Like,
that just stresses me out just thinking about
it. How do you even, like, manage that? And so that's why we took the approach to build out, like, an ecosystem around our kind of discovery mentality. So reaching out to those partners in the ecosystem that we built relationships with, that we trust, and that knowing what their sweet spots are, right? So we talk to about 40 to 50 VC firms pretty regularly. We have investments in some of them, but we know each of them we kind of curated for the stage of companies they invest in and then the industries that they go after and then their thesis. And so I know if it's a hospitality thing to go to talk to those four people, right? And so that really helps us speed up and stay on top of things. And then my team can work more on the harder part of bringing them into the bank, getting them through all the regulation and the hoops and the security.
It's a lot like business development.
That's pretty much what I do is business development.
And you have a pipeline just like you would be in sales almost.
My wife is in sales, so we joke about this all the time, because 5 years ago she said, "You're in sales, Dave." And I'm like, "No, I'm not in sales." No, I'm absolutely.
You are in sales.
And I do have a pipeline, and we look at the value that these solutions could bring to the bank, and that's how we prioritize our pipeline.
Mm. So you prioritize it based on impact to some degree.
Yeah.
Okay. And is there a lot of people shouting for that impact? Like from internally saying, you know, I have these problems I need to solve, or?
Yeah, there is. So we evolved the team where we used to be just like a first in, first out kind of approach. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years ago, we split it and we have dedicated people over dedicated businesses now. So think of it as a relationship manager, an account manager, whatever terminology kind of works. Mm-hmm. And through that, we've built really great ongoing connections and relationships. So now we know what it is they're looking for. And so,
yeah,
but because we have a team of five and we're servicing up to 24 different business lines in the bank, we can't be everything for everyone. Mm. So that's why we've learned we had to prioritize.
So
I'm going to get to you in 2 months because this thing outweighs what you're trying to solve, right? And have those conversations with them that way.
You have a tough job.
I
have the best job.
I do have the best job. So here's the tagline. Here's what makes my job easy. Our tagline for our team is quick no's, longer yeses. Mm. And we said that originally for the founders, so we would always be transparent with you, because through my time at Target, I saw senior leaders not being particularly transparent with founders, and I saw founders putting too many eggs in baskets that were never going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's just not fair or ethical, right?
That's a very fair and responsible and professional way to handle it.
Thank you. Yeah. It came through a lot of guilt, basically.
Yeah.
Because
I feel bad. Like,
I felt bad. Like, this felt wrong. This wasn't right. Mm-hmm. I knew they weren't going to move it, but I didn't have the power to say it at the time. Mm-hmm. So I said, I never want to be in that situation again. So here's our standard that we have as a team.
Yeah.
And we're a Midwestern company, so not everyone likes saying no. So some executives don't like saying no, but so we say no for them, right?
Yes.
So we love your solution. They're not ready to move. We'll reach out to you again when either we're ready or something changes on your side, and we'll see, and we'll keep the relationship.
Well, that upfront and being honest, I think when I think of US Bank as a brand, and this is my next question is going to be about customer experience. Yeah. That's so critical that from the inside out, you guys are living that mantra.
We have a great philosophy. I'm biased, obviously, but I've been around a few companies. The ethical structure and culture that's at the bank is awesome.
Yeah.
It just takes a weight off your mind.
Yeah,
because the checks and balances are in there. You know, you're going to have to try really hard to do something wrong.
Yeah,
right.
You know where everybody stands.
Exactly. You know what's expected. You know what acceptable behavior is.
Oh, that's great.
It is awesome.
So the question I want to ask about customer experience is thinking about your view of how the work that you do impacts the end user, whether that's a consumer, customer, or a business.
So that's a part of what I think makes it for me is. Sometimes the customer doesn't see it, right? So that behind the scenes kind of thing, they don't see. Sometimes they really see it and they live it. And I think this is one of the things about fintech that's so awesome, mm-hmm. is it's reaching out into some critically underserved communities where they just haven't had either the knowledge or the access, mm-hmm. to some of the services that banks can do. And I'm still learning finance, right? So I've only been in a bank for 7 years. I know nothing. I know nothing about finance on a daily basis because there's so much that goes on. This just convoluted and hard to understand, but there's so much benefit from being in control and having access to money at the right time in your life. Mm-hmm. And having access to money in a fair way is just amazing. And so there are certain solutions that we put in place that have just granted access to people, and previously even hadn't had the knowledge or the ability to be able to do that. And so that's an amazing experience.
I love that. Yeah, we spoke earlier with a friend, Nick Elders, who founded Spark, based in Minneapolis too, neighbor of yours. And similarly, bringing automation and using fintech to help solve problems for the underserved market so they can get financing to do the work they need to do at a fair rate.
That's it.
And as quickly as possible with as less headache as possible, because it wasn't like that before.
No.
And fintech has made that possible.
Yeah. It's amazing. And also just the ecosystem around fintech too. We paid for a study with one of our local kind of, nonprofits that was an accelerator for diverse founders. Mm-hmm. And what they found is every dollar that they received was basically manifested back out into the ecosystem by 120%.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Right? So every bit of funding they could see, and we paid for this research to show it, that's 120 kind of dollars of return for every dollar you give them.
God, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So that makes it fulfilling.
It does.
Yeah.
And it's one of the big cores of the bank is community. And so whenever we can see things that benefit the community as a whole, it's amazing. And what you find is when you start diverting money into communities that haven't had them, mm-hmm. the effect is absolutely stupendous.
Yeah. What do you see like for US Bank and your role, what do you see as like the next big opportunity? And I don't know that I want to even seed the statement AI at this point.
No, it's hard not to say it these days, right?
Yeah. But whatever the technology is, like what do you see, like where do you see it going from here?
So, and I think that the productivity, the AI, the promise of AI is huge, right? So it's hard not to go there. I'll make a prediction, and I'll probably get fired for making this prediction, but I think one of the things that banks in general have had trouble really getting their head around has been underwriting and that kind of automation of creditworthiness, et cetera. And so we have things like credit scores that are in existence, and everyone relies on those because they're trusted, they're true, they're regulated, there's stuff around that. So I think there's a huge... And we're seeing a lot of fintechs now, right, step into that space and using different data around that. And so I think banks are going to start to embrace that more so. It's going to be very slow because there's a lot of regulation we've got to get through. But I think that automation of underwriting would be the thing I'm probably most excited about over the next 3 years or so.
I'd love to see that happen.
I would too. The other thing I'm really excited about is the digitization of assets, of any kind of asset. So if you think of banks, majority still use paper, believe it or not, for a lot of different things. And so when you can digitize that piece of paper, split it up, have fractional shares, open up, create marketplaces, invite people to it in a fraction of a second, that's amazing. And so there's a lot of work going on right now, and has been for numerous years, around the notion behind the digitization, tokenization of everything, and that being a new way of working. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So you didn't just arrive at this, as we talked about in the beginning. You've worked your way through the industry. What advice, knowing what you know now, would you give to someone that might be interested in coming into the fintech industry?
Bland advice, but I think it's still really true, is be humble and be curious. Be humble because you have to be a little bit arrogant, because there's going to be so much demands on your time. You got to be able to say, I'm doing the right thing, and here's why I'm doing this one thing. So no, Mr. Senior Executive, I'm not going to be able to get to you today. So, but at the same time, you need to be really humble with it, right? It can't be cocky, can't be arrogant. I would say whatever company you're working in, find out which job family runs that company. My experience has been wherever I've worked, there's been one skill set or job family that is the backbone of that company, and they make the decisions. Mm-hmm. So in Cargill, for instance, it was the CFO function, right? So finance just controlled everything. And if you knew that, you knew how to operate. Mm-hmm. And so in Target, it was more of their traders, like the people that bought the stuff for the stores. They ran everything, right? And so they had the power. And you got to figure out where in your organization who has the power and understand how they operate, and then build your systems around that. And it will really accelerate you.
Yeah, smart. So I have one more.
Yeah.
This one is around the idea, and just want to kind of just paint the picture here, is our society and our country and our world runs on systems. So there's this, you know, governing system that we all kind of count on being true and reliable. And I've seen, at least from my own perspective over the decades, a loss in trust. And whether, you know, in the financial systems, it's the same thing. Yeah. Trust is so critical. And you see some of the concerns people have had, 07, 08, 09, the markets tanked then, and then we've had hiccups along the way. And then trust in general in society, I think, is a lot less than it has been over the last several decades. So how do you see, whether it's U.S. Bank or the fintech industry or new brands coming out, from your view, how do you see them doing a better job building that trust so that we can restore faith in the system?
That's a great, really deep question. I'd say it starts with transparency and authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a bank. I'm never, if I did a series of ads where I'm reaching out to really young kids and I'm trying to be something that I'm not, everyone's just going to go, that's ridiculous. What are you doing? Right. And it becomes mercenary and you don't like it. So being authentic. So I'm a bank and I'm boring, right? We get that, right? So that's the embodiment. And that's okay, because we're actually, they want us to be boring, because with boring comes security, with comes compliance, comes those things that give you trust that we're going to be good financial stewards for your money. But I think in the future, it's just that case of be transparent, right? Mm-hmm. Don't try and hide what it is you're doing. If you're doing something for mercenary reasons, say, this is why I'm doing it, because we need to make money, because money is how we get to here, how we get to either. That's okay. But just be transparent about it. And so I think if we are clear, and fintechs are good at this, right? It's, here's my mission. Here's what I'm doing, right? And just help people understand that and make sure you're involving the right decision makers to guide you down that path too.
It's been awesome.
It's been a pleasure.
David, so fun. We got to do this again.
I would love to. Yes, it was great. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Have us back in Austin.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Come on back.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, don't forget to hit subscribe. And if you'd like to learn more about Customr and the work we're doing building financial and fintech brands and businesses, please visit our website, customr.com. That's CSTMR.com. Or you can find us interacting with clients and sharing insights on LinkedIn. All of these links will be in the show notes.